Hello. Good evening.
Yes. Oh, okay. Hello.
Hi, good evening. Good to greet someone. How many of you are pursuing coaching? Just wondering. This is Maria Diaz.
Are you asking, are we a coach?
Yes, if you are pursuing as a coach, the field.
Oh, yes, I'm a coach. I've been trained by Dave for many, many years now.
Okay, good to know.
I'm a coach as well.
Oh, great. Yeah. Great. I'm asking because in addition of this class, I'm also pursuing that field as well. And I'm looking for someone to practice and maybe to obtain these bartering hours for the ICF, if that is possible. That's what I'm asking.
You're looking for someone to...
To barter hours with me.
Maria?
Yes, this is Maria.
This is Laverne. I'm willing to do that with you.
Okay. You want to have my phone number? I'm just leaving.
Yes.
I trust you.
Okay.
And I also need to reach to find out your number too as well. Thank you so much for your kindness. Okay. My
You're
number
welcome.
317.
Mm-hmm. Well, we made it this time. Congratulations. And thank you
thank
for your
you.
Flexibility with
you.
Our difficulty last time. I need you to manage the background noise and do a star six mute. Let's do a brief discussion. I sent you, as you know, the Brain Science of Story. I was planning to do that. That wasn't just a guilt offering because we didn't connect. But I had planned to send it to you at the end of last time, so you got it just a bit early. I want to make a sidebar comment and highlight something in it that it really is about how our mind and brain works and how that fits with the construction of successful stories. And that every story, whether we're talking about a blog, a wedding toast, a book, has the three components: the challenge, the development, the resolution. I need a mute. There's some techno static. If you're on a computer phone or a cell phone, especially if you'd mute for the background noise. At the very end of that white paper, there's an application for those of you who are coaches, and I see that most of you are, and I assume that those of you who I don't know just yet are. There's an application for making a recommendation for your professional coaching services that follows the format of these three story components that can engage someone in a very brief, clear, succinct, simple way and make a recommendation that I think has the best likelihood of getting a follow-through for your professional coaching services. Notice that at the end of that white paper. And thanks again for all of you who have sent in questions. There are a couple that seem to represent a number of others that I wanted to respond to and then open it up for any discussion just briefly before our material. One of the first things that was sent in, Abe sent in, what are the five most important aspects of writing a book and why? Well, I wouldn't bring it up if I couldn't answer that very simply. Sit down, get present, decide what chunk you'll write about, do it, repeat four times. Now, the real challenge is how best to do this. What is your, think about how your most meaningful exchange with someone, a good friend, a client, someone you know very well, what's your most meaningful exchange? Is it verbally? Is it text and typing? Or is it FaceTime? Think about what works best for you. Do you work better visually? Do you work better auditorily? Do you work better kinesthetically? Do you like to see your words appear on the screen as you type them? Are you a talker, and do you need to dictate into a dictation device and upload it and have it transcribed? Or do you need to do it kinesthetically to have a yellow pad? My favorite, just now no longer living author, Pat Conroy, wrote every novel he ever wrote. I need a management of the background noise. I'm picking up your comments without there being an official question. So if you would please manage background noise. Pat Conroy wrote everything on a yellow legal pad. He was delayed only a bit in his time in Paris because he couldn't find a transcriptionist. I could have helped him because I would have given him I dictate and read it into that and get a, you know. So, thoughts or questions or things that might be helpful to talk about briefly before we begin with our discussion of the craft of writing. Thoughts, comments, questions.
Well, I want to first say that I haven't.
Sorry.
This is Gwen Furr.
Okay.
And I haven't been receiving any of the emails. I sent to you an email indicating that, and I still haven't received any of the things that you have been emailing out.
Right.
So maybe at the end of the session, I can give you my direct
email. I haven't gotten anything that I haven't responded to, so obviously I haven't. Just dkruger@mentorpath.com. Send me an email and ask for if it's the white paper, and I'll fire it off to you. I sent it to everyone who I have official registration for. So I'm sorry if I missed that. So thanks. Other comments, thoughts, or questions?
Hi, David. David, this is Bonita.
Hey, how are you?
I'm okay. I'm working, everyone. So I'll be muting out in a moment. But I'm determined to participate, so I'm in the clinic.
Great.
But I just wanted to let you know, I did shoot off an email to you. I didn't understand the little orange, it looks like a little orange cloud, but I didn't get the link when I clicked the link. So I'll just send off another email to you about that, the nuts and bolts of authoring. I don't see the handout or anything, so I just wanted to let you know.
Now,
that.
Are you missing the outline for our four seminars?
Yes, for this one.
What little orange thing are you referring to?
Oh, when I look at the email, when I click back to your response, at the very bottom, it has you responding to me, but it has a little orange, it says to me, and then it has a little orange cloud. I don't know what that is.
Okay.
I clicked it. I didn't know.
I have no idea either. Send me an email and let me know what you need, and I'll
thank
fire
you.
Back to
you. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Okay, that's it.
Great. I'm glad you were able to join.
Okay.
You doing good?
I'm perfect. I'm loving this session very, very
okay,
much.
Super.
And everything you're saying is perfect. I need it. Thank you.
Okay, great. Hang around because I'll probably change my mind by next week.
Okay. God bless you.
Other questions or comments or things that might be helpful to talk about briefly?
Yes. Hi, David. This is Anita. How are you?
Great. How are you?
Good, good. I like your comments about the different ways. One of the things I found in the past, so I'm just an old school girl who likes pen and pad.
Okay.
When I start to jot down my thoughts about something I'm thinking about, but I'm trying to transition to using, like, Google Voice or dictation only because I'm finding that my wrist is getting a little tired. I guess it was just a comment. I'm going to try out a new method. I've always, for years, loved just journaling and the pen and pad, but I'm going to challenge myself to maybe transition to the dictation method, which will then just allow me to go back and, like, edit. Correct?
Okay. Well, what you may be, if I am understanding, that your natural and most creative style is journaling, is writing. And when
that's
you
correct.
Get in a flow and get in a state of mind that's creative and get immersed in that, writing obviously works well for you. And anything like typing or dictating would take you out of that flow. So I would say plan a time. It's just like creative immersion in writing involves a totally different part of the brain, a different state of mind than editing. So for editing, what do? You create a time that you edit. So after you have done all of this, you may create a time that you take your journals and dictate to a dictation device. I use the little Olympus digital recorder and upload to iDictate, and it gets transcribed for a penny and a half a word, and it comes back as a manuscript. So it's very efficient, so you don't interfere with your creative state, which is the writing and the journaling, but it makes also the transcription a very effective process, too, if you do it that way. Does that make sense?
That's quite helpful. Yes. Thank you.
Because there's two different states of mind, and you might as well respect that. You know, just like writing and editing. Instead of going back and forth, that takes energy. Every time you change a state of mind, it takes a good deal of energy. We're told that it takes as much energy to change to turn on a TV as it does to run it for the next 3 hours. Same way with our mind. If we change a state, that takes a good deal of energy, and we have to change back, then same thing. And that's the reason you probably want to create a space where there's no interruption, where you don't have to interrupt your creative writing time with a telephone or a text or of any kind of voicemail. Protect that time so that you can be immersed. You know, I don't plug in my phone till 9 o'clock in the morning because that early time is my creative time, and I'm immersed. There's nothing that interferes with that. So,
thank you. That's
helpful.
What's
your ideal time for a creative time? What's your biorhythm that works best for that? And carve out that, protect it, schedule it, structure it, and see how that works.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, great. Any other quick comments or questions?
Hi, Dave. This is Catherine.
Explain. I'm sorry.
I heard Catherine. Go ahead.
And this is Gwenfer.
Okay. Mine will be really quick. And thank you for the white paper, The Brain Sciences Story. I really liked that. It's very helpful. And I like that we are wired for story and connection. But my question is, in writing, do we think about an audience? And you may have talked about this before, and it's just not clicking with me. But do we think about an audience? Or do we tell our story and then decide who to market to?
When you tell your story, what's going on in your head about who you're telling? The telling begs a recipient, it seems like. When you say telling, who are you telling?
I see what you're saying. Well, when we're writing it out, I kind of see what you're saying. Like, I'm one of those I still use the yellow notepad. I write it out, and then sometimes I'll go and I'll type it. I'll use
okay,
my
okay, but literally,
laptop.
Literally, try, focus on my question. Literally, who
okay.
are you telling?
I'm kind of telling everybody. I'm telling my story. I don't know. When I'm
well,
telling my story. I guess
you,
maybe
you need. I would say pick an audience
mm-hmm.
because you're going to talk. Think about your five best friends. When you began a conversation with one, that can't be superimposed with another. When you speak with a group that you're affiliated with,
okay.
that group deserves a special communication from you that's unique for that group. You're going to have
okay.
much specificity when you have someone or some group that you speak to. Everything
mm-hmm.
I've written, I've dictated, I'm speaking to a group. I envision a group. I envision a person or a group,
mm-hmm.
and I'm talking to them, and that makes it very meaningful and very personal.
Okay. All right.
Try that
I
and see if it works. Because if
okay,
you're
that makes
to everybody,
sense.
You're talking to nobody. You know, I want to coach everybody. You're going to end up coaching nobody.
Right.
Okay?
Right. Exactly.
Try
I went through that too. Okay.
See what happens and give us a report back, Catherine.
I will. Thank you so much.
Another brief question that came at the same time as Catherine's. Would you go now?
Yes, this is Gwen Furr. I was just simply asking about the Olympus that you mentioned. This is my first time hearing that particular term. So
about
I know
what?
That
Did you say?
Olympus. When you were talking about...
That's just the name of the... It's a trade name of the digital dictation device, the Olympus, OLYMPUS.
Okay.
It costs $69 on Amazon. I have one
okay.
every place I may sit down. I have one at my chair here in my office. I have one at my ranch, one in my car, one in my... I have one everywhere I might sit down and reach out because I don't want anything to be lost. If I ever have a decent thought, I want it to be captured, okay? And that's the best way to do it.
Okay. Thank you.
Dave, you said that the machine name is Olympus. And what else did you use in addition to Olympus, or is just Olympus?
The only other trade name I used was iDictate. It's just
okay.
iDictate.com. I upload and have an account there, and they transcribe it and send it back.
Great. Thank
okay,
you.
I'm going to go to our lecture mode because I want to cover some things. I'll come back, and I think we'll have some time at the end for discussion. Okay, we're going to talk about the craft of writing. You really learn something by doing it. Writing is no different. You learn to write by producing a certain number of words on a regular basis. You become an author by rewriting. You're the author of your life story and your written story. So here are some reflections as we talk about the craft of writing. What do you do uniquely well, better than anyone else? Who's your audience? When you set a goal for writing, be very clear about these three things. What your reader needs from you, what you want to offer them, what things you understand that you want to convey to the reader. Now, of course, this is all after the question of who are you speaking to. So here's an idea about understanding your motivation for publishing. We've moved from writing to publishing now. There are 12 and counting. People want to write for a lot of different reasons, and here are some. To disseminate your knowledge, experience, and message to readers. As a gift to clients. As a premium with some other offer. For example, an ebook is a bonus for subscribing to your messages. To publish with a traditional house using an agent to establish a national presence as an author. The very traditional idea of publishing. To make money by selling the book yourself. To use your book to make money for other services and products, kind of like a business card on steroids. to establish yourself as an expert, to enhance your client base. Now, these all may be related. As a springboard for seminars, workshops, presentations, retreats, or in current day, Zoom conferences, mastermind groups, think about whatever the current and future version will be. To develop mastermind groups or discussion groups based on your book. To make a difference in people's lives in our own small way, you know we each want to change the world. Here's one of my favorite playwright, Tom Stoppard, said, words are sacred. They deserve respect. If you get the right ones in the right order, you can nudge the world a little. Or to leave a legacy. Here's how the dedication of one book, A Memoir on Parenting, sounds. To Ryan and Lauren, I hope there will be a time when you will find at least some of this book interesting, though if I've done a good job of parenting, not revealing anything new. I don't know whether or if it will be tomorrow or a dozen years of tomorrows from now. Know that whenever it is, I will be loving you. May you walk through all your days with love remembered and love renewed. Dad. That's my inscription from Making Memories. And I'll use it later as an example of one publishing option. There are 9 or 10 different publishing options. I want to go over each of them so you can find the fit for you. Now, here's something, and I want to preserve some time because I have some illustrations of voice. Definite voice is conversational voice. You've heard about someone's voice in writing. I want to develop that because I think that's huge. The writer gives us a sense that we're listening to an empathic storyteller, a skilled raconteur, rather than simply looking at words on paper. Now, this is different from following the simple advice, write the way you talk. Voice involves more than accurate transcription. A true essence of conversation comes from attentive listening and dedicated revision. Transcribing talk. Now, don't hear this as anathema to what I just said about a method to write involving dictation. Transcribing talk is not writing. When I'm talking about using a dictation device, I'm talking about writing and engaging a conversation with a specified audience. But it's one technique to help cultivate voice. Some writers, I've heard, speak into recording devices to let their voices flow, to hear themselves at the same time. One step in your editing process is to read your words out loud. Then you can recast a word or sentence that doesn't sound quite right. In fact, there are many authors, including me, who would recommend one final piece of editing for you to do before you let anybody else see it is to read it out loud. Barbara McClintock, awarded a Nobel Prize for her study of gene transposition in corn plants, said she made her discoveries by listening to what the corn told her. She described respecting the life and presence of the corn and, as she said, letting it come. She said she learned the stories of the plants. She heard them. She watched their daily green journeys of growth and came to know the plants in the way a healer or mystic would have known them from the inside, by hearing the inner voices of corn speaking to her as another being. She won a Nobel Prize for this. Even in previously contributing to the psychoanalytic literature on empathy as a scientific way of listening, it never occurred to me that an ear of corn had much to say. And I grew up on a farm and grew corn. I suspect that if I mused out loud to a colleague that some vegetables were talking to me, he'd call the guys in the white coats. For Barbara, though, it was a true exchange. From the perspective of voice, consider this short passage. This is one illustration. I have some others that I hope we can create some time to read. Oh, and I might mention, set aside, if you can find it, 15 minutes at the end of our final seminar for an additional discussion, a question and answer, so after the top of the hour, we can have some additional time to discuss. So, this passage fits with my philosophy of coaching, as well as it was a preface in my last book, written as a psychoanalyst, Integrating Body Self and Psychoanalytics and Psychological Self. It's from Anatoly Bouillard's Intoxicated by My Illness. Listen to how he says this. My ideal doctor, I can imagine entering my condition, looking around it from the inside, like an ideal landlord with a tenant, trying to see how he could make the premises more livable. He would look around, holding me by the hand, and he would figure out what it's like to be me. Then he would try to find certain advantages in my situation. He can turn disadvantages into advantages. He would see the genius of my illness. He would mingle his demon with mine. We would wrestle with my fate together like Rupert and Birkin in the library and D.H. Lawrence's Women in Love. I would also like a doctor who enjoyed me. I want to be a good story for him, to give him some of my art in exchange for his. I guarantee you, if I read you 16 passages by 16 different authors, when I read a passage by Anatoly Bouillard, you could pick it out at this point. That's voice. So, let's look. Let's go back to the work. Design every part of your book. Now, we'll revisit these in a moment in the book outline. But here's just a brief overview. The title. Five words or less that tells and sells. We're going to come back to this and why, and from a good brain reason why. The subtitle is the promise, the benefits described. Go into, or look at Amazon, any book that's doing well. The title tells and sells, and the subtitle tells you the benefit that you're going to get by reading it. The silver bullet. A clear, sharply focused description of your book that can be recited in a very brief period of time, in a single sentence. Now, it should clearly explain what your book is about, why it's special, and the precise benefits it will offer to readers. Think of it as the hub statement of your book. Who's it going to benefit? And what are the benefits that are unique to your book? A fourth, the mission statement. A 7 to 9 word statement, preferably 7, of the purpose of your book. And here's an idea I would suggest you consider. The back cover. Write the back cover before you write the book. It's a compelling story. It's a compelling ad stop copy of the benefits to the reader. The book introduction. This is the problem you address for your audience. Why you wrote the book, its purpose, its benefits, and how you'll present it. Think about how many people, whether it's on Amazon or a bricks and mortar store, will pick up a book, and if it's a brief introduction, 1 or 2 or 3 pages by the author, that's your initial engagement. That's where the relationship begins. There's going to be a feel for what it's going to be like to go on that journey together. And if it's compelling, that journey will occur. If it's not, the book goes back on the shelf or another click. Write the table of contents. Write the book outline. We're going to come to that. And write a query letter. The lead, the body, the bio, and the close. Even if you don't plan to use an agent, it will still help you conceptualize an overview and intended impact of your book. Because whatever you do, whatever form of the 9 or 10 variations of publication, the primary person who's going to market your book, even if it's the best traditional house in the world is still going to be you. So let's look at the nonfiction book proposal. Why is this important, even if you don't plan to submit it to a traditional publishing house? Well, here's the reason. The book proposal is the business plan of your book. It's the blueprint that the architect uses to build the house or the structure. The book proposal is the blueprint for your book. You need to know where you're going, goals and strategies. Setting a goal will enhance motivation. Establishing strategies will facilitate focus. If you don't know where you're going, any map will do. You should have the end in mind in the beginning. Lewis Carroll said this really well. Alice came to a fork in the road. "Which road do I take?" she asked. "Where do you want to go?" asked the Cheshire Cat. "I don't know," Alice answered. Then said the cat, "It doesn't matter." Develop an organizing idea with a substantial center. What's your book about? Why does it exist? You're going to communicate both of these notions again and again in various ways throughout your book. The title, the subtitle, the headline sentences, the chapter subtitles, they all fit a brand, the essence of your book. The nonfiction book proposal is a tool to help you organize and elaborate your concept of a book. Another purpose of the proposal is to tell a publisher about your book, why it's important, why you're the one to write it, and why it will be successful. Even if you do not plan to ever let anyone else see it and do not go a traditional route in publishing, it's still an essential aspect of writing. A good book starts with a good idea. The book's merit should address these primary issues. Why would someone want to read your book? Who's the target audience? What is your unique book? Can the hook and the message support an entire book? What will I be telling my readers that they don't already know? So these are the components. This is in your outline. These are the components of the book proposal. The title should contain no more than 5 words. Well, why is that, since I don't believe in rules? Well, the reason is a longer title requires the reader to think instead of feel. The title should create a motivating visualization and experience. We know that more people think in pictures and learn in a visual way than those who learn in auditory and kinesthetic ways put together. So the title should trigger positive images, not negative ones. Its focus should also be positive rather than negative, not even the avoidance of a negative. Neuroscience tells us we get what we focus on, not what we want. The title should pass the airplane test. This is my personally devised test that came to me when a well-known publisher asked me to write a blurb for the dust jacket of a book that was coming out. I asked him about it because I happen to know the author, and I asked him what the book was about, and he told me the book's title. And I said, well, I'd be happy to review the book if it had a different title, but that one doesn't pass the airplane test. He said, okay, Dave, what's the airplane test? I said, if I'm on an airplane and somebody sees the book I'm reading, I don't want to be embarrassed by the title or feel stupid to be seen reading it or have somebody wonder what kind of problem I have that I'm trying to read about that the book will fix. He thanked me, had the author change the title, and sent a nice bound galley to review, and the book did amazingly well. And now, there are exceptions to everything. Here's one exception to the idea of 5 words or less for a title. It's a bestseller by child and adolescent psychologist Dr. Anthony Wolfe. And this is just slightly more than 5 words, and it's a bestseller. Keep that in mind. This is the title, not the subtitle. Get out of my life, but first could you drop me and Cheryl off at the mall? A good title for an adolescent psychologist. Two, second part of the book review, the overview. A compelling compelling overview of your book, 1 to 2 pages in length, to communicate what your book is about and show the essential worth and marketability of a book. And this is what says it's a book rather than a blog or a magazine article or a newspaper story. It should be a clear, concise statement with probably these four elements: what the book is about, why it should be written, how you're going to write it, and why you're the best person to write it. 3, markets. This section is your summary of the review of information about the markets: who's going to buy your book, who you're writing it for, why it should exist, your strategy to sell it. 4, the competition. The competition section spells out the results of your research and assessment as to the viability of this proposal, the competition, complementary books, and how you support the idea of the book's existence. 5, promotion. What you're going to do to help promote and sell your book, including some specific points about everything that you're going to do to support it, from presentations to online presence to various aspects of marketing, interviews, articles, affiliate partners, contacts, electronic, regular mail, memberships, everything that you do and will have that will have an impact on people who are interested in your book. 6, your background. Emphasize your background and the experience as it relates to the book. And 7, chapter outline. This section, its organization and persuasion, is critical. When you write the book proposal, you will have maybe a quarter of the work of writing the book already done, because you just have to, you know, fill out the outline after this. This section, this outline, is maybe one page for each chapter. It's an organization and contains, the chapter outline contains a table of content and a chapter-by-chapter outline with chapter abstracts. That's the one page each. It's a synopsis of each chapter. It may be as little as 2 or 3 paragraphs up to a page. These chapter abstracts allow you to show what you can do without having to write the book yet. It's your blueprint for the book. If you're going to sell this in a traditional market with an agent and a publishing house, to write a nonfiction book, you don't have to write the book, but you better have a good outline. You may want to include an example chapter. That's what I've done with every book I've published with a traditional publisher, is to have an outline and a sample chapter. And that's all an agent needs to represent it. That's all if you want to represent yourself to publishers that accept unagented submissions to do that. Now, so the sample chapter, number 8. It's usually chapter 1. It simply shows what your writing is like, that you can do the job, that you can engage the reader from the first sentence. Look at some of the recent nonfiction bestsellers. Look at chapter 1. Inevitably, it's going to begin with a compelling story, a powerful story to engage the reader and captures the essence of the book's message. Now, the nonfiction book proposal usually runs anywhere from 20 to 40 pages, plus a sample chapter. It's that long. The book proposal is not just a sales tool for the writer. It's an essential teaching tool for you, the writer. It's your game plan, your superstructure. This book proposal serves as a map for you because it requires you to understand and develop the meaning of your book and articulate what it's about. It requires you to think about why you're the person to write it, why anyone would be interested in it. These are the demands that you should already be placing on yourself when you first consider writing a book. In fact, the first month or two of creating your book may be about investigating your idea and writing your book proposal. Now, here are the 2 best books, in my view, still, for writing a book proposal, and they've been revised consistently, and far and away they're two best. I have a preference because one fits my style a little bit more, but they're very different, and they show different kinds of book proposals. One is by Michael Larsen, L-A-R-S-E-N, How to Write a Book Proposal. And the other is by the two Hermans, Jeff Herman, H-E-R-M-A-N-N, and Deborah Herman. And it's Write the Perfect Book Proposal. I think it might be helpful to do both because you're going to see that one or the other fits your style. My style fits with the Hermans, and they give book proposals that look more like my book proposals and are really helpful in that. So here are seven habits, since you ask, of highly successful writers. One, create a specific plan, including your schedule for writing. Remember, if you want to do something, create a system. Stick with it no matter what. Sometimes one of the most important things in life, as well as in writing, is to show up. Your schedule is simply a writing plan, and it may look like some version of, it can look very different. I will write for 2 hours, 5 days a week between 8 and 10 p.m., or I will draft 500 words of writing each day, 5 days a week. I will create two chunks a week. I will create an outline of the book by date. I will create an annotated outline by date. Whatever it is, have a plan. Focusing on a specific, simple action plan sets up the best potential for your effectiveness and mastery. Divide up your work. Focus on and complete one thing at a time. There's always something you can focus on. Here's an illustration of this. During my specialty training in psychiatry, a few of you have heard this story before. One of my first-year supervisors had a really puzzling picture on the wall. It was a photograph in which everything seemed curiously out of focus. I met with him every week, and I'd glance at the photograph until finally, toward the end of the year, I asked about it. And he said, "Look carefully, Dave. What do you see?" And I said, I walked over to the photograph to get a closer look. Closer didn't help. It still seemed out of focus. I saw no particular aesthetic value. My experience and considerable interest in photography, and I'd even been published in photography, did not help one bit. And I said, "Steve, the only thing I notice is there's only one branch or one tree in focus in this entire picture." And he nodded. He said, "That's why I have it hanging there. It's my reminder that while things may seem confusing and blurry, there's always at least one thing you can have in focus and see clearly." Which is why he was a great supervisor for first-year residents. Two, when you write, write. Don't combine writing and editing. They're two different mindsets, as we discussed earlier. You can't do both at the same time. Different parts of the brain are involved. Plan separate times for each task. Probably do the writing when your biorhythms indicate that this is your more creative time. Three, take one small step at a time. Have a specific, definable goal. Write in small bursts. Terry Fox started the Marathon of Hope, a cross-Canada run of 3,339 miles. He had an artificial leg, so his running style was a shuffle and a hop. He managed to average 24 miles a day, completed the run in 143 days. He was asked how he kept going when he was exhausted and knew he had thousands of miles ahead. He simply responded, "I just kept running to the next telephone pole." Now, he happened to know where the telephone poles ended on the other side of Canada, which also corresponded with where the Marathon of Hope ended, but all he did was go to the next telephone pole. Four, find your most efficient way of writing and stick to it, whether it's the computer, as we've discussed, writing longhand, a yellow pad, or dictating, whatever fits your learning and creativity style. Pay attention to the best time of the day for a creative process of writing and for the more objective work of editing. Pay attention to your biorhythms. In Texas, we say it's easier to ride a horse in the direction it's going. Same thing. 5, read your work aloud. This can be, as I mentioned, an effective element in editing. If possible, join a writer's group to hear your work and other work read by others. Most of the writer's groups, and the writer's groups I've been in, would have someone else read your writing, so you don't get to say, oh, wait, pause there. Hold on. You need to talk a little more softly there. You'll hear it as somebody's reading it, which is very useful and very objective. 6, do adequate research. Effective writers know that good research is about pursuing questions and information of themselves as well as books, websites, reports, white papers, interviews. One way to review new information, I do this on a daily basis, is Google Alerts delivered to your email box, the abstracts and links of anything written in the world, from books to articles to journals to blogs, anything you're interested in. I have a couple of dozen and have it delivered each day. 7, read the writing of others. We learn by reading. Read what instructs as well as what stimulates. Read from other related fields. Stretch yourself. You'll find your own best balance for reading and writing. So let's look then at the top 6 mistakes successful writers avoid. 1, avoid passive sentence construction. As you reread and edit your work, convert passive verbs into action language whenever possible. Strive to be clear, specific, simple, and humane. These are the 4 rules of writing from William Zinsser in The Art of Writing, the other book besides the 2 outline books I would recommend. These are also the best principles of good speaking: clarity, specificity, simplicity, humanity. Significant work goes into keeping it simple and making it look easy. Keep the burden of the clarity of communication. Don't shift it to the reader or listener. 3, show, don't tell your audience. Use stories, metaphors. Combining a good story, the right brain, and pointing to the story's lesson, left brain, engages both sides of the brain for balanced learning. People accept ideas more readily when their minds are in a story mode as opposed to a more analytical mindset. Show, don't tell. Melville didn't write a story about whaling. He wrote a unique action and dialogue drama between one guy and one fish. Stories are how we understand, how we make sense of things, how we remember. James Watson, the scientist who with Crick discovered DNA, said, you know, I can remember something when I fit it into a story. A story is a system for holding facts together. We remember better with a story. A story makes things make sense. Lawyers know this. Little kids standing next to broken vases know this. Muriel Rukeyser said, the world is made up of stories, not atoms. Keep the I to a minimum in order to acknowledge and engage your reader. 5, lose jargon and fancy phrases. Hemingway believed that 1 to 2 syllable words worked way better than longer ones. So don't try to impress your audience with your intellect, your vocabulary, your research. Your reader wants a savvy friend who explains things in a down-to-earth way, who also happens to be an expert. Be a good storyteller. Keep that white paper on the brain science of story. It's how our brain processes story. And the components, the algorithms of what goes into that. When you carefully craft a speech or tell a story, the art lies in evoking the desired emotional response from the listener or reader, rather than expressing it yourself or telling them what their reaction should be. You're a catalyst to enable the reader to have the emotional experience. We can learn from the poets who offer their art to the reader or listener as a doorway to their own experience. One of the storytellers I studied with told of an experience he had going through the airport in Chicago. A woman stopped him to say how much she enjoyed his presentation and how it had stayed with her for all these 4 years since she heard it. He asked her to remind him what he had talked about. She said, "Oh, I don't remember what you talked about, but I'll always remember that story you told." So let's look at chunking exercises. A chunk is simply a piece of writing about the size of a newspaper column that looks at a single subject. So, exercise one, write a single chunk. Treat the single subject as a complete self-contained piece. This might be an anecdote, a vignette, an exercise, a description of an event, complete thought, or a case study. It should be, maybe, on the subject related to your book. Start collecting stories. When you think of a story or hear a story, write it down or dictate it. Exercise two, write four more chunks. You will see that chunks are the building blocks of nonfiction books. Exercise three, fit your chunks into your outline. See what the chunks illuminate or describe to further a section or a specific chapter of your book. And four, plan a month of writing. After you've written five chunks and fitted them into the outline, you may want to revise your outline. After revision, decide what chunks to write next. And for these, you'll be more aware. You'll be increasingly aware of what you want to write and can make a writing schedule. So here are some important areas of focus for this serious writer. One is the mission statement of your book. In business, a mission statement is a statement of an organization's primary purpose, the strategies to achieve that purpose, and its fundamental values. A personal mission statement can clarify and give meaning to your daily activities, add focus and commitment to what you do. So consider the mission statement for your book. There are four elements of a mission statement: ideals, purpose, strategies, and goals. These are in your outline. Ideals are the core values that motivate and guide you, defining the important elements of what you're going to convey in the book. The purpose, what you want to accomplish, the benefits the reader gets that are consistent with the ideals. Strategy is simply the art and science of a plan of action. This has to do with how you'll conceive, craft, and deliver your book. And the goals? Effective goals are SMART goals. That's some of the bread and butter of what you've learned as coaches. Specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, time-bound. So, create a mission statement for yourself as a writer. It can guide you, remind you of what you are meant to do. This can become a compass to guide your story to completion and fulfillment. Write it down. Look at it each time before you begin writing. I'll share my mission statement: to inspire and guide people to achieve their unique, most empowered life and business stories. And since you asked, my plot is to live, love, contribute, and play with absolute passion. Two, a business plan for your book, which is the book proposal. Three, a timetable, maybe a calendar of completion of each aspect of your book. Other important areas of focus, a daily schedule. Your writing office, a space of your own. Virginia Woolf emphasized this, to have a room of your own. Your tools, adequate support from computer to business stationery and cards, books, references, magazine, maybe something that you have in your writing space that represents your commitment to writing. I'll share some of mine if we have time, but I don't want to be distracting. Seven, continuing education in writing, and in your subject matter, and in marketing, all three of those. Maybe a writer's group. Some of the huge leaps forward I made have come from attending two writer's groups at the University of Iowa. In them, I learned as much from the other participants as I did from the well-known writer who coordinated the groups, and won a University of Houston imprint series. We did something I've subsequently incorporated into a boot camp for writers that asks the reader to request, or the group suggests, someone else to read it, as I mentioned. And you're hearing somebody else reading your writing. It adds some objectivity. So finally, let's talk about your belief systems. If you want to change your life, first change your mind. How do you do an inventory of beliefs that may be limiting or compromising, especially as it applies to your writing and your book? Analogous to impressionistic painting, each of your experiences is a dab of paint on a pointless canvas. Only when you step back and view the entire picture do you recognize the points form a pattern of a particular segment of life, that the segments have their own unity. You create each experience, the patterns, and the composite image. Each is a different level of awareness. You're always free to change your mind, always free to change your beliefs and core assumptions about who and what you are. Changing your mind not only alters your brain, but also transforms your life. But first you have to be aware. Prediction and expectation based on the past create repetition. But when based on the present and future, prediction and expectation create possibilities. A belief system constructs either an obstacle or an opportunity. And consider this. What you seek may be camouflaged in what you fear. To say that a different way, show me an obstacle, I'll show you a desire. We always create the outside to match the inside. The secret here is that an obstacle is the unconscious mnemonic of desire. It reminds you of what you want, but it makes it seemingly safe to want it if you're afraid. Here's an example. I saw a cartoon of a dog straining at its leash, barking relentlessly at a cat, as if to say, just let me at him. The next frame showed the cat, who was one vicious creature and scary in her own right. And then the dog barked again, strained at its leash, just let me at him. And then suddenly, in the middle of a ferocious bark, the leash snapped, leaving the dog free to go after the cat. He looked astonished, scared to death. He quickly ran back, grabbed the leash, and tied a triple knot. Then he could again strain safely at his leash and bark his ferocious, just let me at him. So here's the coaching principle. When you find yourself focusing on an obstacle, for example, I can't find time to write. When you find yourself focusing on an obstacle, reflect on the underlying desire. And here's the principle. When you're ready to consider that you create the obstacle, you're ready to consider the possibility of not creating it. Imagine what it would be like to not create your obstacles. Okay, we're in conversation mode now. If you'll manage the background noise, comments, thoughts, or questions. I'm interested to hear your take on this, or clarifications or questions. Is this making sense to you?
This is very powerful, David. And it definitely spoke to, I mean, to be just very transparent. I proceeded to set up a time at my office after my last client. I squared off a time between 3 and 4 o'clock to be my writing time.
Okay.
And tried to, well, I shouldn't use the word tried. I'm just being transparent and truthful. When you use these words that try, meaning I didn't do it, I guess. You
exactly.
know, I could,
yeah.
I'm catching myself. I identify everything. I'm just letting you know what happened, which was just absolutely true. But you spoke to all of it just now. In that little summary that you reminded me, I'm good. I know what I need to do.
Okay.
I just have to do it. So that was excellent. That's
okay,
what I wanted to say.
Dave, it's Carolyn.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
I just have a quick question. I just want to go back over something that you said, and I want to make sure I caught that. You were, I think, making reference to the sample page or the sample section that you referenced Chapter 1. Did you say, and this is just clarification, did you say that the sample should be 20 to 40 pages, or are you suggesting that each chapter be 20 to 40 pages? I wasn't clear.
No, the book outline would be 20 to 40 pages.
The outline.
And and the sample chapter would be in addition to that, whatever that is. And each chapter may be 2 to 3 paragraphs up to a page. There are some good examples of book outlines in both of those books, especially the Herman book, about book proposals that have sold to major publishers. So there are a lot of different examples, and it's not a, you know, everything needs to look just alike, and you'll see that from the both of the books, especially the Herman book, which is why I like
so
it.
So it's Deborah Herman, and what's her husband's name?
Jeff Herman.
Jeff, thanks so much.
H-E-R-M-A-N-N, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Other questions or comments?
Hi, Dave. This is Rob.
Hey, go ahead.
So you mentioned unagented publishers. I'm wondering if you could maybe mention who some of those might be, or do you recommend any of them, and what might be the advantages of pursuing an unagented publisher?
Okay, we're gonna talk about that. That has a huge answer, and thick books are dedicated to that. We're gonna talk about that specifically in Business of Writing, about how to go about systematically thinking about what direction you want to go in publishing of the different 9 or 10 options. Why would you choose one over the other? How to go about it once you've picked, and then what to do. We're going to address that in a systematic way, because otherwise it can be overwhelming, because there are hundreds, you know, hundreds and hundreds of publishers, and the fit, I think, is something that you need to really do for do. I hear that somebody has a cough, but if I could get a mute, I wouldn't know that it's effective. So any other, we got just a minute or two, any other thoughts or questions, comments? So I know that's not an answer, Rob, but I'm telling you, we'll get there.
Okay. Oh, no, that's plenty. I appreciate that answer, so thank you very much for that.
Anything else? Well, I appreciate your input. Thanks for all of the kind words and the emails and the responses still to the questions. Again, a couple of you who have not received some things, send me an email and I'll fire it back to you. And we will pick up right here next week, and we'll address the aspects of the science of writing. So, and leave the business component till the final seminar. So, any questions or things you think of, feel free to fire an email. And we'll pick up right here next time. Take good care of yourselves. Thanks very much. See you guys.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I'm still here to gather your information. I'm still here. This is Maria with the lady that I was talking. Did she hang up? Hello?
I'm here, Maria. Maria?
Yes, I'm here. I say, oh my goodness, probably she forgot, because yes, I'm in the kitchen. I'm doing, I'm kitchen also taking the class. How are you? My name is Maria.
I'm Laverne. I'm doing good.
Okay. And your name you said is Amber?
It's Laverne.
Laverne.
So it's L-A, and then there's a space, capital V-E-R-N-E.
Okay, hold on for a second. Would you help me? L-A and then a hyphen or something?
It's just a space, and then it's a capital V.
As in Victor? As in Victor?
As in Victor.
Okay, and then?
E-R-N-E, Laverne.
French.
Yeah, it is French.
That's pretty. Okay.
Thank you.
My name
so
is
your number is 317.
Mm-hmm. 966.
966.
Mm-hmm. 8528.
Okay. All right, my number is 443.
Uh-huh.
226.
Yes.
3538.
3538. Okay, can I verify that with you? You don't mind?
No, I don't.
Thank you so much, Laverne. 443-226-3538.
Yes, that's it.
Okay.
And let me verify yours. 317-966-8528.
Perfect. That it is. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. I have a question for you. As I said to you, I'm in the kitchen and also taking this class. But
yes.
Do you have an email so we can exchange emails, and that way we can find out the time, the best time for each one of us to do this thing of coaching, if that is possible and feasible for you? Sure.
Absolutely. And we can also text, you know.
Beautiful. Even better, Laverne. Beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Did I say that correctly, Laverne? Is that a way?
Yeah, you did. You did.
Okay, finally. God, thank you. Okay. I'm writing for your email, Laverne.
Okay, so it's Laverne, and then it's a period, you know,
okay,
like a dot.
So it's
and,
L-A-V as in Victor.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
E-R-N-E. Yeah. So it's L-A-V as in Victor, E. R as in rocket ship, N as in Nancy, and then E.
Okay, you know, I was adding an E before the other N. Okay.
Oh, okay. So then it's a period, you know, a dot, and then it's
yes.
F as in Frank.
Okay.
I-E.
Uh-huh. I-E.
L as in lemon.
Uh-huh.
D, and then S as in Sam.
Okay. Laverne
at,
Field
mm-hmm.
at
yes. gmail.com.
Great.
So
perfect.
laverne.fields@gmail.com.
Perfect. Okay. Mine. I will spell that for you.
Okay.
S as in Sam, I as in
mm-hmm.
Andrew, G as in George,
mm-hmm.
and S as in Nancy. O
mm-hmm.
as in orange, R
mm-hmm.
as in rose,
mm-hmm.
A as in apple,
mm-hmm.
E as in David,
mm-hmm.
I as in Andrew,
mm-hmm.
E as in apple,
mm-hmm.
E as in zebra,
mm-hmm.
M as in Mary,
okay.
A as in apple,
okay.
At gmail.com. Can you can verify with me?
Yes. Okay. So S I G N as in Nancy, O as in orange, R A D I A Z M A.
Perfect.
At Gmail. Okay.
Perfect. Okay.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you. You too. And I have to be honest with you. Since I'm taking this class, I'm thinking, though, maybe to start with this coaching thing after I finish this class.
That okay, that will be fine. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Because that way I have another time. And then I will send you the days that I probably can work. Can you do during the day or no?
Well, it depends on, you know, how out my meetings flow. Thursday is not very good for me, but I can take some time during the week sometimes, because usually I coach somebody on a Friday for my hours, so maybe a time on a Friday is good. Sometimes
okay.
Tuesday is good, too, in the afternoon.
Okay, you talk about so, what time you're talking about in the afternoon, just for me to have an idea. Tuesday in the afternoon, around what time?
Around 3 o'clock.
And then Friday?
Friday from 10 to 2. And then from Well, after next week, it'll be from 3 on. I could do it.
Okay, on Friday. And then on Tuesday, mm-hmm. you said at 3 p.m., most likely.
Yes.
Okay. Then I will look on my calendar. That sounds great. Yes, and you said that it's okay after we finish that class.
That yes, that will be
okay,
fine.
Perfect. Yeah, me too, believe me. I cannot have more of that. Thank you so much, Laverne. And looking
Thanks,
forward.
Thanks, Maria.
Yeah,
me too. Enjoy your week, okay?
You too, girl.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Nice.